the show, and an opener with a bit of a Middle Eastern feel, I think. But it's actually a piece of German origin by the 13th century poet-musician or Minnesinger known as Neidhart, or sometimes more poetically as Neidhart von Royenthal, Neidhart from the Vale of Tears, which isn't because his songs particularly overload on misery or anything, but it's apparently due to a mistranslation somewhere back in the 19th century. In fact, Neidhart's songs were generally rather jolly, bawdy even, with several included in the famous Carmina Burana collection. But he is nevertheless considered to be very much part of the Minnesinger tradition, those chivalrous fellows who, like the troubadours of France, sung of idealised love, usually aimed at some unattainable courtly lady. And talking of court, Neidhart seems to have spent quite a bit of time there, as a singer to Duke Friedrich II in Vienna. And it's that city that's the subject of today's early music show. Of course, these days we tend to think of Vienna as the birthplace of the waltz, the centre of European cultural life in the 19th and early 20th centuries, home to the likes of Beethoven, Schubert, Bruckner, Mahler, Schoenberg, Strauss. But just what was musical Vienna like in earlier centuries? Well, jump a couple of hundred years on from Neidhart and we find our next Vienna-based musician, also at court, but this time in service to the Holy Roman Emperor Ferdinand I. Heinrich Finck was one of the most influential composers in Europe in the early 16th century. He travelled a great deal with the imperial court and produced a huge number of vocal works and organ pieces, one of which we'll hear now. This is Ich werde erlost, or I am tired, which is certainly no reflection on Florian Pargitsch, who plays it now. Organist Florian Pargitsch playing Ich werde erlost by the early 16th century composer Heinrich Finck, who spent the last years of his life in Vienna. Around the same time as Finck, we come across the Flemish-born composer Heinrich Isaac. He was also quite a traveller, moving all over Europe in the service of various employers, before eventually landing up in Vienna with the plum job of court composer to the Holy Roman Emperor Maximilian I in the late 1490s. Isaac was an outstanding organist and an enormously prolific composer with a really diverse output. He utilised just about all the current forms and styles of the time, and particularly lovely, I think, is his setting of the Italian poem Fortuna Desperate. The text was one of the great hits of the Renaissance. It inspired many musicians, and Isaac turns it into a gently flowing part song written especially for his employer Maximilian. Desperate fate, wicked and cursed, who blackened the name of a woman beyond compare.
Thank you.
Clark's group, directed by Edward Wickham, in that setting of the Italian poem Fortuna Desperate by Heinrich Isaac, who lived and worked in Vienna in the late 1490s. You're listening to The Early Music Show here on BBC Radio 3 with me, Lucy Skeeping. And on today's programme, I'm looking at some of the composers who helped to build Viennese musical culture pre-19th century. We're going to hear next from one of Isaac's most notable pupils, Ludwig Zenfel. This Swiss-born musician had first met Isaac when he was a choir boy in the Emperor's Chapel. And after his voice broke, he stayed on in Vienna to study for a few years, returning to the city over and over again throughout his life. After Isaac's death, Zenfel was made court composer himself. And he evidently felt a great debt to his teacher because he wrote a biographical work about his own personal journey into music, which is full of praise. Isaac was his name. I do not think it will be forgotten with what refinement and clarity he composed. He is known in all the world, delightful in art, cheerful in tune. His melody flowed freely, which caused wonder. It's a lovely tribute, isn't it? Like Isaac, Zenfel was equally at home in both sacred and secular music, and he seems to have got his gift for writing melody from his teacher as well. His lines are warm and lyrical, as you'll hear in this subtle but touching version of the Marian motet Ave Rosa Sine Spinis, Hail Rose Without Thorns. It's played here instrumentally by the Consort of Viols fretwork. the viol consort fretwork with Ludwig Zenfel's instrumental setting of the religious motet Ave Rosa Sine Spinis, Hail Rose Without Thorns. Now, we couldn't really have a programme about Vienna without including any Strauss, could we? I'm not thinking of Johann or Richard, of course, but an interesting character from the 17th century, the court musician Christoph Strauss. This early Strauss spent the last decade or so of his life in Vienna, 4 years in the service of Emperor Ferdinand II, then from 1620 as Kapellmeister to the city's imposing cathedral of St. Stephen's. I do wonder just why he would have left such a prestigious job at court, but it seems that he and Ferdinand simply failed to hit it off. In fact, such was the level of bad feeling that the emperor even attempted to sabotage Strauss's career, withholding money and trying to block any future jobs. Still, once he was at the cathedral in his final years, Strauss must have been more content, and it was there that he wrote some of his most enduring works, including monumental masses and sacred motets like this one, O Rex Gloriae. O King of Glory, Lord of all power, do not leave us as orphans, but send us the Spirit of Truth. Bruce Dickey directed the voices and instruments of Concerto Palatino in the motet O Rex Gloriae by Christoph Strauss. It's quite likely that our next Viennese composer would have known Strauss at St. Stephen's, although perhaps not all that well since he was just a boy chorister when Strauss was in charge of the music there. I'm talking about Johann Schmelzer, who grew up to be a cathedral cornet player and eventually one of the most celebrated violinists of his day. He was another who worked at the imperial court, first for the Holy Roman Emperor Ferdinand III and then for his son and successor Leopold I. Both great men thought highly of him. And it's nice to find that the feeling was mutual because when Ferdinand died in 1657, Schmelzer composed a heartfelt lament in his memory. It appears to be his earliest preserved composition and is performed here by Tafel Music. Johann Schmelzer's Lament on the Death of the Emperor Ferdinand III, Tafel music directed by Jean Lemon. So Schmelzer remained at the imperial court in Vienna until his death. He had a good relationship with Leopold I, who was a keen patron of the arts and something of a musician himself. And in 1673, he ennobled Schmelzer, a huge honour which meant that the composer could now add von Ehrenreuth to his name. And no doubt it gave him many social advantages. 6 years later, Schmelzer was given his longed-for position of court Kapellmeister, although it was short-lived. The plague had reached Vienna, and the composer finally succumbed in 1680. His son Andreas, though, survived it, and he has a hand in the next piece that we're going to hear. It's a reworking of a sonata by another composer, Heinrich Biber, who was one of his fellow musicians at the court in Salzburg, where both the young men were employed. Biber himself was a bit of a whiz kid, a quite extraordinary violinist. He'd had a meteoric rise through the Salzburg ranks to become director of the court orchestra, and it was there that he produced a set of violin sonatas that were both brilliant and unique, each of them based on one of the mysteries of the Rosary. So what did his friend Andreas Schmelzer do? Well, he turned one of these so-called Rosary sonatas, the one about the crucifixion, into a new piece with a political slant, which he retitled Victory of the Christians, a cleverly constructed musical depiction of the Habsburgs' conflicts with the Ottoman Empire and the subsequent Battle of Vienna in 1683, which ended in defeat for the Turks. I guess you could call it programmatic music, really. Each section carries a brief description of what's going on. So we get the advance of the Turks besieging the city of Vienna, the Turkish assault, the advance of the Christians, the meeting of the Christians, the Turkish withdrawal, and finally, of course, the Christian victory. John Holloway was the violinist with harpsichordist Lars Ulrik Mortensen and Aloysia Assenbaum on the organ in Andreas Schmelzer's Victory of the Christians, a musical depiction of the war between the Holy Roman Emperor and the Turkish army, which ended in victory at the Battle of Vienna in 1683. And as we've heard, Schmelzer based it on an earlier work by one of his composer colleagues, Heinrich Bieber. You're listening to BBC Radio 3 and the Early Music Show with me, Lucy Skeeping. And on today's programme, I'm looking at some of the music and musicians associated with Vienna before its 19th century heyday. The next generation of composers to emerge in Vienna included a man who was arguably one of the most influential, Johann Joseph Fuchs. From 1698 and already a successful organist, Fuchs worked his way up the career ladder through three different emperors, Leopold I, then his successor Joseph I, and his successor Charles VI, eventually becoming court musical director. Fuchs's reputation today is often that of a heavy scholar rather than a major composer, but the imperial Habsburgs were a pious lot. Any composer worth his salt had to compose realms of sacred music for all their chapels and ceremonies, so Fuchs duly obliged with some wonderful pieces, including a particularly lovely setting of the Magnificat. Here's the opening movement. The opening of Johann Fuchs's Magnificat for four voices, one of his six settings of the Magnificat, in fact, and arguably the most representative and progressive of them all. So throughout his long career in Vienna, Fuchs served through the reigns of three Habsburg Holy Roman emperors, and he achieved enormous fame, not only as a composer, but through his scholarly treatise, the Gradus ad Parnassum. This great tome on musical theory and mathematics had a profound effect on future generations. Haydn largely taught himself counterpoint by reading it and recommended it to the young Beethoven, and Mozart apparently had an annotated copy of it, which he carried with him. Fuchs stayed at court until his death in 1741, at the ripe old age of 81, the year that one of his pupils, Georg Wagenseil, turned 26. Born and bred in Vienna, the young Wagenseil was one of Fuchs's favourites, and he truly followed in his master's footsteps by also serving at the Habsburg court for most of his career. But perhaps the most famous thing about him nowadays isn't so much his music, but a story concerning the visit of the six-year-old Mozart to Vienna to play before the Empress Maria Theresa. There she sat, with her family, various grandees, and of course her illustrious court composer, listening to this extraordinary child genius. And at one point, we're told, during the performance, the cocky little lad called over to Wagenseil, announcing that he was about to play one of his pieces, and would he please turn the pages for him? Which, of course, Wagenseil did, much to everyone's amusement. Sounds like a nice fellow. Wagenseil would have been in his mid-60s at the time, a prolific composer with dozens of chamber pieces, lots of church music, and, over time, something like 15 operas to his name. He was also, by all accounts, a highly accomplished organist and widely celebrated as a keyboard virtuoso, a reputation he carried with him throughout his life. As late as 1772, when he was now severely crippled with gout and incapable of moving from his seat, Wagenseil was visited by Burney, at whose urgent request a harpsichord was wheeled into the room. He then played a few of his own compositions in a very spirited and masterly manner, reported the admiring Burney. Though, he continued, I can easily believe that he once played better. Wagenseil was well able to absorb the influences around him and to adapt to changing tastes. His early works are very much in the Baroque tradition, while later pieces are in the classical style, including some of the earliest surviving symphonies. The piece we're going to hear now is a trombone concerto written around 1760, probably the first piece to be given such a title. And you can really hear from his orchestration, and indeed from the size of the orchestra, that we're now very much in classical territory.
Thank you.
second and final movement of the Trombone Concerto in E-flat by Georg Wagenseil. The soloist was Alain Trudel, who also directed the Northern Symphonia. Well, our final composer in this programme of Viennese music is undoubtedly the most famous, and that's Joseph Haydn, who was much influenced by Wagenseil. As a lad, Haydn spent 9 years as a chorister at St Stephen's Cathedral, along with his younger brother Michael. The boys weren't always properly fed, so Haydn was motivated to sing his very best in the hope of being picked to perform before aristocratic audiences where the singers were usually served refreshments. Haydn, of course, went on to have a remarkable career in service to the Esterházy family, and his fame spread right across Europe. So much so that when he left the Esterházys in 1790, he found himself in such great demand that he could scarcely believe it. In London, he was treated as a celebrity. And back in Vienna again, he and his wife were able to settle into a grand house. In later years, he spent most of his time there, writing works for public performance, including his two great oratorios, The Creation and The Seasons. And he frequently appeared in public to conduct his music for charity benefits and so on. But as time went on, Haydn's increasingly poor health meant he struggled to complete his final works. His last major piece, in 1802, when he was 70 years old, was a mass for his old employers, the Esterházy family. It's known now as the Harmonie Messe, or wind band mass, due to its unusually extensive use of wind instruments. Haydn went on to live for another 7 years, and he even survived Napoleon's attack on Vienna in May 1809, when the city eventually fell to the French troops. But his health was fast deteriorating, and less than 2 weeks later, he was dead, and Vienna had lost one of its greatest sons. Of course, the city flourished in musical terms for the next 150 years or more, but I hope you found it interesting over the past hour to hear the music of some of the individuals who helped make Vienna a great musical city in the years before the turn of the 19th century. Let's end with part of Papa Haydn's last major work, the Sanctus from his Harmonie Messe. It starts gorgeously slow and serene, and then bursts into a joyful chorus, Pleni sunt Cæli, heaven and earth are full of glory.
Sanctus from Haydn's Harmonie Messe, performed by Concertus Musicus Wien, directed by Nicolaus Arnoncourt. And that ends this week's Early Music Show, which was presented by Lucy Skeeping and produced in Salford by Les Pratt.